supreme truth is satyam. That supreme truth is divine
wholeness, tapa, or
paramatma, as it is called.
That supreme truth
is the divine fragment,
atma, as it is called.
I am one of the encased divine fragment. That means I am atma with
a body brain system.
So I am that supreme truth,
satya.
Where is there any cause for doubt? Where is there any cause for hesitation to acknowledge this? See? This is
a pointer
to the wrong identification we have that we are the body brain system. We normally say as if we possess the chair or a table, I have a soul,
instead of saying I am a soul
having a body.
Normally we say, I have a soul. So this is wrong identification.
I am a soul having a body brain system.
When this identification changes, not technically, not mentally understanding it, but when experiencing it,
that I am the divine fragment,
and I have a complex system, what
I know as a human complex system.
When this identification is clear in my mind, when this wrong identification is removed, that is the beginning of yoga.
Till then you have done nothing.
So, similarly, we come back here,
where the sage mentions
avidya is the condition of confusing
the permanent, pure, blissful
and the self with which?
With that which is impermanent,
impure, painful and the not-self. One of the basic mistakes resulting through avidya, low inner awareness, is to take for granted the external physical man and ignore the spiritual man within. But merely saying this is not sufficient. It is our responsibility to bring about full communication with the spiritual man within and reach a high level of awareness from within.
In Savitri, Aurobindo writes,
this bodily appearance is not all.
The form deceives, the person is a mask.
If deep in man,
celestial powers dwell.
This universe is all communication and awareness of a high, very high order. Else, it would be like a living graveyard. We may not know the code, but it can be understood and learned at a certain high level of awareness. See, the whole yoga talks about communications. Our science has advanced so much today. It doesn't talk about communications. It talks about a galaxy somewhere there. It talks about a sun somewhere there, or a comet somewhere there. It does not talk about the communication that is everywhere. And the basic communication is between your body-brain system, between your astral and manas system, between your mental body and buddhi. This is the basic communication. Not only this, once you have this communication, you start learning a code, how to communicate. When you learn this code, you communicate with universal divine mind. When you understand the code further,
you communicate with your own divine self. When you learn the course further, you communicate with anything, anywhere in the universe. Without communication, what are you? Nothing. You are a single small island, each one of you.
Communication? It is nothing. It's a graveyard. It's nothing.
If we are here, supposing we cannot speak and we cannot hear, we are island.
That he finds communication so difficult. We are in a way
deaf
and dumb as regards higher communications.
We are also, to a large extent, blind. With our two eyes,
we may be able to see fairly well up to a distance of 300-400 meters. And here, from a distance of 200-300 meters.
A shout at a distance of 100 meters.
That is all our communication. So beyond this, you have to make use of certain instruments. It is a fact of nature that we have been given all the equipment that science has produced so far and will invent tomorrow. And all these type of communication is within your reach. That which teaches you this is yoga.
Yoga is not asana pranayama only. Pure and higher yoga is nothing but communication.
And
the greater the extent of communication, the greater your freedom.
We are talking about such communications here. This universe is all communication and awareness of a very high order. Else it would be like
a living graveyard.
We may not know the code, but it can be understood and learned at a certain high level of awareness.
One clear example of how avidya acts
is given by this sutra. Avidya can make us think and act in a wrong manner at any step. Therefore, the great need is not philosophy, but practices
to raise our awareness level.
Only this will eliminate avidya, and with it, many other hindrances and obstacles will also go away. But to look upon the human body brain with contempt and call it impure, to go into the details to prove it impure is a big mistake. It can be impure, but it can be made very pure. This body-brain system is very essential for progress. With care and understanding, we can make it a clean and beautiful temple for the inner Ishvara, the Gurudeva. But we must also not mistake the physical body-brain system, the eye, for Ishvara. 2.6. The sense of personality is due to identification of the knower with the instruments of knowledge. You as pure divine fragment, you as pure as the part of the divine wholeness, you are supposed to know everything as a divine fragment. the divine fragment, you don't need outside knowledge. When the identification is with your body brain system, knowledge does not spring from inside. Knowledge is gathered from outside. The more a man knows from outside, the greater the dead weight he carries. Because that dead weight is useless. A donkey loaded with gold will die of starvation. It requires only a little grass to eat. That whole load of gold is useless to that donkey. We are like donkeys carrying great loads of knowledge, which for our living is useless. For our progress it is useless. Look in nature. You put one corn of wheat or rice and you get so many grains of rice and wheat. We are not adding to what we have sown. Because natural growth is from within. But we are convinced that natural growth comes from outside, inside. We will teach our children how to eat with a fork and a knife. We'll teach our children how to drink tea from cup without making any noise. These are shades of culture. That's what we think. How not to get angry and abuse somebody, we don't teach. Because we don't know ourselves how not to get angry and abuse. So whatever we learn and whatever we teach is not useful to us. We come from a polishing and completing school and rich parents take great pride that my daughter has come from a But that same daughter, you should see how she behaves. Because she has not been taught real knowledge. See? This is all our wrong identification throughout life. It is nice to know how to eat with a fork and a knife. I don't deny it. But it would be nicer if you can behave under provocation, well behaved, smiling, fully controlled. I would rather appreciate that. So, everywhere, at every stage, our identification is wrong, our values are wrong. This is what here in 2:6 we are trying to read. The true knower is the spiritual man within. The external physical and the inner psychic man are both merely the instruments of knowledge. They serve to gather knowledge. But we identify these instruments as the knower. This is the essential mistake. We appreciate a man who has academic qualifications. We strongly believe that without college education, a man is uncultured. A man is ignorant. If you can go through the length and breadth of India, You will be surprised that hundreds of thousands of farmers will express thoughts that you have not read in all your school and college education. And that is their wisdom. So, whatever we gather is not to be identified as true and proper knowledge. The root cause being avidya, as Bengali Baba in his book writes, the purusha is the power of the pure perceptivity, perceptivity, to perceive, perceptivity. It is the gift of God to man. What does it say? Perceptivity. You perceive. That means simultaneously you see and understand. When seeing is followed by knowledge to understand, is not perceptivity. Perceptivity means as you see you understand, and that is perceptivity, to perceive. So he writes beautifully here, the purusha is the power of the pure perceptivity, and the intellect is the power of the perceiving instrument. The transformation, confusing of these two into an apparent identity is said to be the affliction called egoism. I know so much. That is the end sentence. I know so much. 2.7. Desire is attachment to objects of pleasure. Desire is human and natural, but it should be tempered with discretion and knowledge. However, mere worldly discretion and knowledge will not guide or help towards progress. It requires higher yoga knowledge as well as practices. Attachment arises from repeated experience that gives pleasure, whether it be food and drink or a soft bed to sleep on or other pleasures of money, wine and women. This state of attachment means that as yet one has not experienced the dire consequences of such attachment that ultimately give pain. Now, without being a philosopher, let us try to understand our human state. If there is a magnet, and if there is a piece of iron, the piece of iron is drawn and is attached to the magnet, and that is a natural law. This piece of iron is weak, it should not attach itself to this magnet. That is not natural. In our Gujarati there is a saying, Anga, that means a woman, and ghee, that means a man. Anga agal ghee muke. If you put a man near a woman, if he melts, it is natural because you put ghee near fire. Just as a piece of iron near a magnet is attached, these are natural laws. We are not trying to fight natural laws. We are here trying to understand our great slavery, our mental slavery. I am talking about our mental slavery. It is stupid to philosophize and say that a man should not go near a woman. The whole world will not continue. But what I mean to say is that we are slaves. We are unable to defend once we are totally conquered. That is what is meant here. There are natural laws which are to be observed. You have to eat, you have to sleep, you have to have some pleasures of life. You are a human being. It's no use having a long face and give up everything. No, that's no place. In the entire sastras this is said, that no place. It is a misunderstanding that we have to be very sober, don't smile, don't do this, don't do that. Nowhere is it stated that. You have a right to enjoy life. Only do not become a slave. Do not become a slave to this. At any time if you want to get up and walk out, walk out. At that time, don't look back, lingering, oh, what am I giving up? No, that is what is stated here. Be free, don't be a slave. Live your normal life, it is meant to be enjoyed. See? Don't see television, don't go to the pictures. No, nobody says that. In no sastra it is written like this. But, do not be animal. Do not be too slavish. Let not your heart break if you have to give up something. Understand? That should be the attitude. That is what is stated here. And the opposite of attachment is hate. Dislike turning into hate. Love turning into dislike. Love turning into hate. I have still not understood how the same human heart and mind can love and then hate the same person. Either you have never loved that person, I can't still understand, but I have seen in life, love turns to hate as if darkness is the other side of light. But I fail to realize how, if you have loved somebody, how you ever can not love that person. Let go hate. Unless your love has been commercial. It has some aspect of a contract. If he or she does this, then only. And such is the love of the mother for the son and for the son for the mother. How many hundreds of thousands of mothers have said, oh, all my life I have looked after you, what have I not done for you? Now that you are grown up, you are going away with your wife and leaving me alone. Oh my God, all that love the mother gave was commercial, so that one day when she is old, the son has to look after the mother. Such are the wrong attachments, see. You get my point. These are attachments, wrong attachments, see. If you have loved your son, and if you have done everything for that the son may grow up, tomorrow if he goes away with his wife elsewhere, leaving you alone, bye, and bless. If that is not your detachment, you have not loved. You see, that is how hate comes in. From a wrong commercial aspect of love. That is why in the immediate following sutra, hate follows love, attachment. Hate is aversion for any object of the senses. Hate arises as do anger, jealousy and other aspects of lower nature from a low level of awareness or avidya. When awareness is of a low order, the individual is only interested in his or her own good, what is termed ego, or at most in his or her immediate family. When these interests are prevented, anger, jealousy and hate spring up, leading to aggression and crime. Like attachment or love, aversion, hate, also arises from repeated experience that gives pain or disliking, whether it be food and drink, or a soft bed to sleep on, or other pleasures of money, wine and women. In this case, one has experienced already dire consequences thus arising from pleasure. The quote from the Gita, chapter 18:37-39, which at first seems like poison, but afterwards acts like nectar. That pleasure is pure, for it is born of wisdom. That which is at first like nectar, because the senses revel in their objects, but in the end acts like poison, that pleasure arises from passion. While the pleasure which from the first to the last merely drugs the senses, which springs from indolence, lethargy and folly, that pleasure flows from ignorance. 2.9. Intense desire for sentient living existence is attachment. This is inherent in every form, is self-perpetuating and known even to the very wise. Intense desire for living. Well, we talk very bravely about not being afraid of death. But when we stare death in the face, we have a different opinion. At that time, we have an excuse to live a little longer. And we talk about some half-completed job to be completed. After that, I'll be ready. And after that, when it comes again, when that comes again there is an half-completed job and you say, I'll be ready after my this second half-completed job. So, we are normally afraid. Afraid, death is nothing. Death is meaning that we are going away from this earth planet. That is the meaning of death. Because we do not know any other planet or place where we can live again. All the sastras and gospels and all the talk about heaven, hell, this, that, which nobody has seen. So a common man knows this earth as a place where he can live, then he can have a family, friend, he can satisfy himself in 100 ways. So naturally, he would really dislike to leave this planet and go elsewhere where he doesn't know. So, attachment to life is natural. As I said, the piece of iron is attached to a magnet. So we are attached to this earth. Because even now, with all our spaceship, we have not seen another earth, so that we can think of being there. And heaven nobody knows, and hell also neither any one of us know, unless we go there, come back and say, look, I have come back to tell you, it is not there or it is like this. Nobody has done that. And that is why I don't want to talk to you about any state after death. About every type of state that we can enter into when we are alive on this earth. So, here, intense desire for existence is attachment. This is inherent in every form. Is self-perpetuating. Up to here, we understand. But Patanjali wishes us to know, and known even to the very wise. And I talked a lot here before you, and seem to be very wise. Patanjali says, as you are not free, I am not free from this attachment. So whoever talks glibly, do not take it that he is not afraid to die. You are afraid? No.
What is the meaning of sentient?
Meaning physical, earthly living.
Just temporary and passing
away. Temporary and passing away. See? If you live for 60, 70 years, and if the earth lives for 5 billion years, and the sun lives for 15 million years, it is still temporary because it ends. Do you get me? So whatever does not end, whatever that does, that does not take birth. What is it? I don't know. Do you know?